was at Christmas, the elders, we felt really stirred by God to for the focus of our Christmas gift day to be to give for the Butcher family in Bolivia, who have followed God's call to go to set up home in the area of Santa Cruz with a heart to really love and serve the children who have no homes and families as well that really need help. And it's just been amazing. Us as a church, we've kind of followed their journey along the way, haven't we, in various ways. And they're building this center, which they hope, not just hope, will be a place where they can invite people in to love them, to take care of them, to help them however they can. And they've been needing some funds to help with the building of the center, but also with the ongoing things that they're doing and the ways that they're getting alongside and helping so many out there. And so we felt, actually, let's give a gift to them. Mike had felt really stirred in his spirit that actually 5,000 you had, hadn't you? God laid on your heart 5,000. Wouldn't that be amazing to be able to give that? And we actually sent a check to the guys at Cornerstone, who would then pass the money on, for £5,680, which is just amazing. So thank you so much for your generosity. For I know the prayer and consideration that went into that. It was wonderful to be able to do that. And I had a voice message from Isaac. So it's Isaac and Anna Lee and their two girls that went out. And I had a voicemail from Isaac on my phone to let us know or to thank us. So a huge thank you to the church from them. And he told me this story. He said that actually he and Anna Lee were having conversations about what they needed to do with the money they had. They needed to buy some new tiles to finish the flooring on the ground floor. But then they also needed to put a deposit down for the windows and for the doors. And they didn't have enough to do both. And they're having this conversation of what to do. And the economy over there is struggling, as many economies are. Actually, everything is getting more and more expensive. So they're like, actually, do we hold off on the tiles? But if we don't do it now, they're going to get more expensive. And they're having this conversation. They had some time over lunch. They were praying together and talking together. And Anna Lee really felt, actually, we just need to buy the tiles. And then God will provide what we need for the rest. And so they just stepped out in faith, like, actually, God will provide what we need. And so they went and ordered the tiles. And then they're thinking, okay, we need something to come in then in order for us to be able to put the deposit down on the windows. 2 days later, literally 2 days later, after they'd prayed, they got a text through from Adam with a picture of the check that we'd sent. So they'd stepped out in faith. Actually, God will provide all we need. 2 days later, a check for £5,680 is on their way to them. And just for them, in their faith adventure and their faith journey, just what it's done for them in being able to trust God has been wonderful. And for us to know, actually, we've been an answer to prayer. The money had been coming in through December, hadn't it? And through January. They were praying in February, March time. Little did they know that God had already been working and providing the resource that they needed to do. He'd been working behind the scenes, if you like, by speaking to us and stirring our hearts in order that he would then answer their prayers in the way that he has. And I just wanted to share that with you. What a wonderful testimony of God's goodness and God's kindness. But I also want to encourage us. There's something for us to give thanks for as we come to worship, because his love endures forever. He's shown that through his provision for Isaac and Anna Lee and their girls and the work that they're doing, but for us as well, and that he's called us to play a part in his big kingdom purposes. But also to say that actually, we sing, don't we? Even when I don't see it, you're working. Isaac and Anna Lee had an answer to prayer. Even when they hadn't seen what was going on, God had already been providing for them. And I just really want to encourage each one of us today that actually God is working things for good in our lives, even if we can't yet see what it is.
So, as well as talking about the gift day, this is, if you like, your annual sermon on giving, which we usually do at about this time of year. So, could you put up Exodus 35, 4 to 9? Right, the context of this is God had given Moses instructions for the building of the tabernacle and for all the items needed for the priests, clothing, you know, everything. And to make sure you're paying attention, to save my voice a bit, I think I'll ask you to read it out together. Okay? So I'll take a cue from Lou and turn around a bit. Okay, let's read it. Moses said to all the congregation of the people of Israel, "This is the thing that the Lord has commanded. Take from among you a contribution to the Lord. Whoever is of a generous heart, let him bring the Lord's contribution, gold, silver and bronze, blue and purple and scarlet yarns, fine twine linen, goat's hair, tanned ram skins and goat skins, acacia wood, oil for the light, spices for the anointing oil and for the fragrant incense, and onyx stones and stones for setting, for the ephod and for the breastpiece." Right. So, notice there's quite a range of things there you could bring. And if we read some of the verses we missed out, you find that some of the women were getting on with weaving goat's hair to make fabrics. So there's all different ways people could contribute. But if we could now jump to chapter 36, verses 2 to 7. The two odd-looking names, which you probably won't recognise, were people who God had identified as the chief craftsmen, skilled in all kinds of crafts, to do and supervise the work. Okay? Right. And Moses called Bezalel and Oholiab, and every craftsman in whose mind the Lord had put skill, everyone whose heart stirred him up to come to do the work. And they received from Moses all the contribution that the people of Israel had brought for doing the work on the sanctuary. They still kept bringing him freewill offerings every morning, so that all the craftsmen who were doing every sort of task at the sanctuary came, each from the task that he was doing, and said to Moses, "The people bring much more than enough for doing the work that the Lord has commanded us to do." So Moses gave command, and the word was proclaimed throughout the camp, "Let no man or woman do anything more for the contribution for the sanctuary." So the people were restrained from bringing, for the material they had was sufficient to do all the work and more. Now, you probably don't expect me to start a sermon on giving with an example of when to stop giving. But 2 weeks ago, Phil Whittle, who's part of the Relational Mission community, leads a church in Stockholm, did a tongue-in-cheek tweet based on this one, suggesting that, you know, when a church sets a budget, if that all the money comes in before the end of the year, they ought to tell people to stop giving. Now, other people then pointed out, well, there's a slight difference between a sort of one-off event and regular giving, and there is. And he recognised that, but as I say, it was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's a good point. And it is something I think we have been applying in terms of gift days for the church over the last 2 or 3 years. Because ideally, we wouldn't want to have gift days for the church. Ideally, we'd like to see all the income coming in regularly to cover all our costs. During lockdown, our costs went down, but your giving didn't. Therefore, the need for those gift days wasn't really there. So in some cases, we converted them because of some event which happened. I think the Turkey earthquake might have been one. And others, we let them just go. Partly because the elders forgot, but also there just wasn't the need. So there was no point. So I'll be coming to what the point is later. But just to put that, I think, in the sense that we'd much rather what we need to be covered by regular giving. But if we need to do gift days, we will. Right, let's have a look now at Mark chapter 12. Actually, my voice is holding up better than I thought it would. So maybe I'll do this one. Mark. 41 to 44. And he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which make a penny. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, "Truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on." So when Jesus is looking at giving, he's not looking at the amount we give. He's looking at what it costs us. Now, I've talked about this several times. It keeps coming up, all sorts of things. And it doesn't just apply to money. And I'm sure, I can't think that would have happened and Jesus wouldn't have arranged something for her to be blessed. But he could, obviously being Jesus, knew what was happening there. So I think the point here is, as I think I was saying a month ago, don't compare with what you can do, whether in giving or any other gift, with what other people do. You need to ask yourself, what are you doing compared to what you're capable of? So that just reinforces that point. Jesus doesn't say much about money, and usually when he does, it sounds a bit negative. But let's go for a bit more positive thing. So 2 Corinthians chapter 9. Going too far. And verse 6. Right. You can read this one again. Right. The point is this?
Yeah.
The point is this. Whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each man must give as he has decided in his heart, not under compulsion,
for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work, as it is written, "He has distributed freely, he has given to the poor, his righteousness endures forever."
I don't know about you, but there's various things from my childhood which I heard and been stuck for life. And one was a story somebody told of a little boy who went to Sunday school but wasn't really paying a lot of attention. And when he went home, his mother asked him, "What's the vicar talking about today?" And he said, "God loves a cheerful liver." Now, I hope your liver is cheerful. You know, it's good to have a cheerful liver, but here it's a cheerful giver. Now, here's your second reason not to give. If you're not cheerful about giving, don't. If you're going to do something in response to what I say later, because you feel you ought to, because you feel the elders are saying this and you ought to honour them, but you're not cheerful about it, don't give. Because it won't bless you, because you're going to be resenting it. It won't bless God, because he knows what you're thinking anyway. And it won't bless the church. If you can't give cheerfully, don't. Now, also, another thing I think you need to get sorted on this. He does say that whoever sows sparingly will reap sparingly. Whoever sows bountifully will reap bountifully. So, the more generously you give, the more God will generously reward you. But it isn't a mathematical formula, which is where some of the prosperity gospels go wrong. So, if you give £1,000, that doesn't mean that God's going to give you £2,000 or £3,000 or £4,000 or whatever. He will certainly bless you. It might be you suddenly find you've got more money than you expected, but it might not. He might bless you in a different way. So it's true that God is no man's debtor, but we can't measure what God gives us purely by earthly standards and think that, you know, if I, because I've come across some people think, you know, if I'm, say, earning £20,000 a year and tithing £2,000, if I increase my giving to £4,000, God's sure to make my income go up to £40,000 a year. No, it doesn't work like that. All right, and some people have got into serious debt trying to work that kind of thing. But, so we're not doing it out of duty, but because God has put it in our hearts to do it cheerfully. That's why, although we think tithing is a very good principle, it's not something which we say is compulsory. Because if you're doing tithing just because you think that's what you've got to do to be a member of the church, again, you're not doing it cheerfully. But on the other hand, we do need to reflect on what God has given us. God expects us to give as he has blessed us. And as we give, he blesses us more. You mentioned about Isaac and Annalee. You know, there, they had stepped out in faith, and God stepped in 2 days after they prayed. If we hadn't been waiting to see if anything had come in the February bank statement, they could have had the check a month earlier and not had to pray. God knows the order he does things in. In 2004, Lynn and I went on a life change team, and I'll murder the Dutch G here, to Rabaul in South Africa. And it was a place where they had a church. It was a place where the Afrikaner couple who ran it, in the middle of a coloured township in Cape Province, they had adopted several coloured children. They had also, in a sense, they were running a children's home for severely disabled children. But because the government regulations didn't really recognise the idea of a non-governmental body running a children's home, they had to do it by some of the people in charge of the houses were fostering some and others were fostering others officially. Once they had about 20 rand in their bank account, and it was getting to the end of the month and they needed 10,000 rand to pay the salaries for the people who worked with the children. The day before the end of the month, there was 20 rand in the bank account. So on the last day of the month, one of the couple, I think it was the wife, went into the bank and said, you know, any change in the bank account? Because I presume the bank knew. Said, oh yeah, you've got 10,020 rand in your bank account. And said, so can I see who sent the money? And on the line it said, I am. 10,000 rand. Now, I don't know what God's IBAN number is, but, you know, God, when you put yourself out for God, he would do things which you don't expect. Now, I've been giving these sorts of giving talks, I don't know how many years, it seems to fall to me to do them. And I think I would say that I thought I had giving sorted. But 2020, during lockdown, I thought, God's saying to me, are you really serious about it? You know, your bank account is increasing every month. You know, you're just playing around with the odds and ends, which you can easily miss. Which is a bit of a challenge. So, over the years, I've been slowly increasing how much I give. For the first couple of years during lockdown, I didn't really notice, because the amount you could spend was lower, so it wasn't a problem. But then something weird happened. I had some solar panels, and so I get a payment every 3 months from E.ON, a subsidy based on the amount of electricity produced by the solar panels. Fine. And I noticed that 1 month, there was another payment about 2 or 3 days later from E.ON for a slightly different amount. So I emailed them and I said, you've sent me this amount of money on this day, it's not mine. And they said, we've got no record of sending you that money. And this has gone on, not every time, I think there's one time it didn't happen. It's been going on for about 2 years now. And one time, because I had a day I meant to put my thing in, and one time the payment came in before I'd even put my reading in. So it's obviously not triggered by me doing the reading. Now, obviously I'm keeping the money in case they... I've emailed them twice, and both times I said, we've got no record of this. So I thought I'll give up. But if they do decide, I can give them the money back. But when I was thinking about this yesterday, I was thinking, actually, that's a reassurance from God that if I give, he will look after me. I don't need to worry. And I think, again, this can apply much wider than just with finance. Because we can think that if we do something, whether it's giving money or giving time or making ourselves vulnerable, helping people, that it will have a cost and we won't be able to cope. It will have a cost. As I said a month ago, you know, following Jesus has a cost. He made that clear. But also, the cost is worth it. Because as we've been singing, he's laid down everything for us. So he's paid vastly more than we ever will. So, gift day. Let's say something about that before we run out of time. Now, my apologies to any trustees here, because I should have been able to talk about it with you earlier. So this is all going to be a bit vague, because it hasn't been authorised by the trustees, and the elders aren't even quite sure what they want to do yet. And obviously, at the moment, we're not really able to meet. We've got some ideas, but we haven't firmed up on them. At the moment, our budget allows for 4 days work a week by people employed by the church. I don't know when it was, 2 years ago, Sam was working 3 days a week for the church, and Karen was working one day with some administration work. Currently, Pete is working 2 days a week, as in it averages 2 days over the year. It tends to be about 3 days during term time and a few hours during school holidays. But it averages out to 2 days, and we still got Karen on one day. So we could employ somebody for another day already with our current budget. And looking at the money coming in, pretty well our income covers our expenditure. So So thank you very much for your generosity in doing that. But as elders, we feel that God is calling us to, again, it came up, I think, expand what we're doing. Not, you know, in a sense, during lockdown, we got into maintenance mode, and we need to get out of maintenance mode back into warfare mode. And therefore, we think we're likely to want to employ people for 5 days a week. We're not certain that. We might use the money elsewhere, but that's the sort of thing we're looking at the moment. But we're definitely not going to go back to employing one elder full time, because we found that that just puts too much pressure on that one elder. So we'd be looking possibly to have people working 1 day or half a day a week doing supporting the church in different areas is what we'd be looking at. Now, in round figures, at the moment, our budget runs to about £60,000 a year, probably but nearer 70 actually at the moment. To employ somebody for 1 day a week would cost about £6,000 a year. So to do that, we'd need to increase our income by about 10%. When I was setting the budget, well, let's rephrase it, drafting the budget, which then the elders looked at and then the trustees decided to agree to, for last year, I was working on the basis that costs would go up by about 10%, unless we knew otherwise, and income would probably go up by 5%. I don't know whether that was true, but it seems to have worked out. As I say, reasonably well. But what it means, if we're going to do that, it does mean that overall we need to increase giving by 10%. Now, we budget £6,000 with 2 gift days. So if we get that, that would cover it. Although it would be much better if it was, as I say, if it was regular income. So as we're coming to the end of the financial year, it's my usual thing to ask you if you will review what your giving is, see what God has blessed you over the last year. Now, some people will automatically change their giving as their income changes. But if you don't, review what God has done and review whether you should make any changes. And that's really all we can ask for you to do. And to be cheerful givers for the gift day. Are there any questions? Was that reasonably clear? Well, you can always ask me afterwards if you don't want to do it in front of anybody else. But, sorry, Sam, can I hand back to you? Because I think my voice is just about giving up.